way. How did you figure it out? Remember when you asked me to help you deal with Gina in Everglades City? He asks. I know you're a competitive asshole, and you definitely aren't about cheating, but taking down someone's internet connection is going a bit far, even for you. A wave of panic floods my brain. For a moment, it's like I'm back in Mammon, the Otherworld realm, where players butchered one another for profit. That's where I met Gina, and where Gina almost made a buck or two off me. That evil witch was going to sell me to a cannibal. I wipe my forehead and realize it's damp with sweat. I've been out of the game for at least 36 hours, but I'm starting to wonder if I'll ever really leave. Kat once told me that Otherworld changes you. I'm starting to think she was right. Just so you know, Gina's a dude, Elva says. A butt-ugly dude, to be more specific. The panic starts to recede when I laugh. I think of the buxom, black-clad beauty I met in Mammon. Of course she is. So what's going on? You have me taking out people's internet and hacking into hospitals to find out where a bunch of coma patients have been sent. What's the connection? I'm guessing it's the company. They're always up to something. Elvis has committed more crimes than anyone I've ever met, and the fact that he'll gleefully tell you all about them means his sanity is questionable, too. I'm honestly not sure I can correctly pronounce his last name, but there's no one I trust more than Elvis. I don't hesitate to tell him everything I know. They've been using Otherworld to beta test something they call the Disc. It's a technology that speaks directly to your brain and lets you experience virtual worlds with all five senses. But it's got a giant bug. If you get hurt in the virtual world, the Disc tells your brain that your real body has been injured too. That's why Kat's limping right now. Her leg was crushed beneath some ice in Otherworld. The accident happened in the game, but her injury is real. If she'd been hurt badly enough, she could have died. The three vultures are circling above something on the ground in the distance, and Elvis is tracking the birds with his eyes. How is the company beta testing a technology that's potentially lethal? He asks. Even if it weren't illegal to experiment on humans, nobody is going to sign up for something like that. Not willingly. That's why the company's been testing it on people who can't say no. They found hospital patients who were unconscious and convinced their families that the company had invented the discs as a new kind of therapy. They even built special life support capsules to house the patients' bodies while their minds are sent to Otherworld. Dozens of people have died so that the company can get rid of the bugs in their discs. And Milo Jokin is letting this happen, Elvis asks. I never thought he was a saint like everyone else. If you ask me, he's a creepy little bastard, but this seems totally out of character. Milo is dead, I tell him. The company's claiming he's gone on sabbatical, but I saw his corpse with my own two eyes. Milo was the first person to use the disc, and he got hooked on the game. It gives you everything you want, even things you never realized you were into. Milo ended up staying in Otherworld too long, and it killed him. I pause. I never realized how crazy it would all sound. I keep waiting for Elvis's head to explode, but he just nods like nothing surprises him. Makes sense, he says. You're not shocked? I am. Elvis offers a shrug. He spent his whole life expecting disaster. What should shock me? That the tech finally exists? That the company is turned evil? That Milo's a putz who got killed by his own game? Come on, Simon. Don't be naive. It was all just a matter of time before something like this happened. I told you before, the future is going to be bleak as hell. People get so excited that we have all this fun new technology, they never sit back and consider how dangerous it might be. We're just a bunch of monkeys playing with a box of matches. The good news is that it sounds like the company's plans are on hold for the moment, I say. We heard on the radio that they've shelved Otherworld. The company must have figured out that they don't have the brain power to fix the tech without Milo Jokin or Busara's dad. Elvis turns to me, and I can see I've managed to surprise him. Busara's dad? What does he have to do with all this? His name is James Agubu. He invented the disc. He's one of the bad guys? Elvis sounds thrilled. No, Milo stole Agubu's tech to build the game. Until 2 days ago, Busara thought her father had been murdered. Then, Kat and I saw his avatar in Otherworld. His real-world body must be stashed away in a capsule somewhere. Milo was keeping Agubu's Otherworld avatar frozen in ice in case he needed tech support in the future. Elvis stares dreamily into the distance. The most beautiful girl in the world has genius in her blood. Our children are going to be superheroes. How did I get so lucky? You haven't yet, I reminded him, and I'd be willing to wager big bucks that you never do. Deal, he says, holding out a hand for me to shake. $100 US, says Busara Ugubu falls madly in love with me. You're on, I say, shaking his hand. I don't mind betting money I haven't got, because there's no way in hell he's ever going to win. Can we get back on the subject now? What are all the hacker boards saying about the company? Have you heard anything through the grapevine that could help us? Even though he's been exiled to a mountaintop with spotty internet service, I'm betting Elvis knows a lot more than I do.
Sure, says Elvis. You just said the company is shelving Otherworld. Well, that's not exactly true.
I have a very strong hunch that I don't want to hear what's coming next, but I suppose it's my duty to ask. What do you mean?
Remember the headsets that went with the early access version of Otherworld?
Remember? Does he think I'd forget? When Milo realized the discs were dangerous, he decided not to sell them to the public. Instead, he made special VR headsets to go with his game. The headsets were considered a huge leap forward for virtual reality technology, despite the fact that they only let players experience Otherworld with two of their senses.
Sure, I tell Elvis. I used to have a couple of them.
Where are they now? Elvis asks. One was destroyed, the other was confiscated. Elvis sighs dramatically.
You were going to wish you'd held on to them, man.
The company stopped production of the headsets, but they're planning to keep the Otherworld servers up and running and charge players a subscription fee. But only 2,000 of those headsets ever got made, I say. How are people going to play the game?
I guess 2,000 lucky players are going to get Otherworld all to themselves, and a lot of people seem to be into that sort of thing. Right now, there are bidding wars all over the internet. Each of those original headsets is going for serious change.
This is not good. I was hoping to get my hands on a few of those headsets. We'll need to go back to Otherworld to find James Agubu, and the discs are too dangerous to use.
How much are we talking about? I ask. Gina got $200,000 for his yesterday. Should have held out longer. A headset sold this morning for $450,000.
You've got to be kidding, I groan, thinking of the headset that my father smashed to smithereens with his 9-iron.
Who spends that kind of cash on a video game?
That, my friend, is a fascinating question, says Elvis. Most of the buyers have preferred to remain anonymous. So the princes, I guess. Third world warlords, heirs to hotel fortunes, Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise?
I was joking.
Elvis chuckles maniacally.
How could you question Maverick? He's always one of the good guys. No, the dudes buying the headsets are the usual suspects.
In other words, any sociopath with $500,000 burning a hole in his tacky-ass pockets. 2,000 of them will soon be loose in Otherworld. I think of the children who've been battling for control of their world. They won't have millions of guests to worry about now that Otherworld's wide release has been canceled, but the 2,000 they will have are going to be far worse than the last batch. Anyone who spent $500,000 on a headset will be itching to get their money's worth.
There are a lot of guys guessing online, trying to figure out who might have a headset. Gina's put up his own list of potential headset owners. There was only one name on it that I thought might be right.
Who is it?
A Russian oligarch, Alexei Semenov. He made billions in fertilizer before he screwed with the Kremlin and had to disappear. He keeps a very low profile, must not like polonium in his tea. But he resurfaced briefly a while back, bought a bunch of property in New York.
Suddenly Elvis turns to face me, his eyes sparkling and a grin on his lips that makes me wonder if he might be a little unhinged.
But why are we talking about the Russians?
It's time for the big questions.
Why are you here, Simon? What do you need to do?
Well, first, we need to rescue the two people being held by the company, along with Busara's dad. Then we need to take down the entire organization.
That's all, Elvis laughs. Any idea how to do that?
Nope, I tell him honestly. I thought you might be able to come up with a plan.
So you want me to help you fight the company?
Yes, I know that's a lot to ask.
Eh, Elvis says dismissively. Someone's got to do it. I knew they were evil, but I didn't know they were so far along with the VR tech. I was figuring their big play would be augmented reality.
Why? I ask. He knows something, I can tell, but he's not going to give anything away just yet.
You say you brought some of the company's VR gear with you?
He asks. Yeah, we have two discs, I tell him. We also have a crazy hologram projector that the company used to kill a bunch of people.
Wonderful!
Elvis slaps the railing with both hands and his accent is suddenly back.
When the girls are clean, we can all show each other our goods.
I groan at his latest joke. How long is this going to go on? I ask, and Elvis cracks up.
Until I get laid or I no longer amused, he says. Don't be a douche, Simon. I've spent the last 6 months stuck on the mountain with two angry Ukrainian astrophysicists. The least you can do is let me have some fun.
A black dot has appeared on the horizon, and I hear the sound of a helicopter.
Yes, I do see that.
Suddenly, Elvis's voice is deadly serious.
Maybe we should go inside now. That one is definitely not a bird.
Show and tell. I grab the equipment out of the car. Then Elvis opens the door to the residence, and we both hurry inside. Until this moment, I actually felt bad for the guy, forced to live like a hermit on a New Mexican mountaintop. Now I realize that Elvis hasn't exactly been roughing it. The house makes my parents' faux chateau look like a maintenance shed. Elvis's living room alone has the square footage of a Costco.
Your house is insane, I say, and that's putting it mildly.
There are no windows, but the space is lit by a series of glass enclosures that are open to the sky. Inside each is a garden filled with plants native to different climates. From where I'm standing, I can see a rainforest, a meadow, and what must be a swamp.
Thanks, but this place isn't mine, Elvis says. It's just on loan until the apocalypse. The observatory is a cover. Something big goes down, the owner is going to turn this whole place into his personal fortress.
Those gardens?
He points to the glass-enclosed meadow a few feet away.
They're decorative now, but they can grow food if he needs them to. When the time comes, maybe he'll let my family stay on as his gardeners or something. Now follow me, he says. The ladies should be downstairs.
As we descend the stairs, I assume the basement floor is blue. It's only when we're just a few feet above it that I realize I'm looking down at a massive pool of water. The stairs twist around and deposit us on a walkway.
You can go for a dip if you like, but it's not really for swimming, Elvis explains as we cross to the other side of the pool. It's a reservoir. Doesn't matter how fancy your fortress is if you end up running out of water.
At the end of the walkway is a sitting area with plush white lounge chairs. There's a waterfall nearby, and the sound conjures an uncomfortable sensation of déjà vu. Fortunately, my attention is quickly drawn to the framed photos on the walls. They're movie stills, I see. Each shows the same man scaling skyscrapers, dangling from wires, or escaping from fiery explosions. What the hell? I say when I realize who I'm looking at. I think I've just discovered the secret identity of the doomsday prepper who built the house. Elvis, is this place owned by Tom Cruise?
Who?
Elvis asks, as if he's never heard the name before. A door opens in the distance, releasing a cloud of steam. Busara and Kat emerge from it dressed in fluffy white robes. Kat has her hair tied up in a terry cloth turban. I see Busara tighten the belt of her robe as we approach.
Hey, the facilities down here are amazing. And we found the laundry room, too, Kat tells Elvis.
Our clothes were so dirty they could have gotten up and walked off without us. I hope it's okay that we used your washer and dryer.
Of course, Elvis says, looking straight at Bussara. Everything I have can be yours.
He's gifted at making even the most innocent statements sound vaguely dirty. All right, says Bussara. I think we've all had enough of the horny Ukrainian goat herder routine. Her voice is as humorless as ever, but the sides of her mouth are twitching like she's struggling to swallow a smile.
I'm sorry?
I gotta give it to him. Elvis is a much better actor. We took a wrong turn and ended up in your parents' room. It's like a shrine to their beloved boy, who, judging by the photos on the wall, has been in this country for at least 16 years.
Damn them, Elvis says with a sigh, but without an accent.
Even when they're not here, those two always find a way to ruin my fun.
I hold up the devices I gathered out of the car.
Oh, I think we're all going to have lots of fun today, I say. What do you say? Time for show and tell?
Elvis shrugs.
Sure,
he says, settling into one of the plush white chairs.
As long as you guys go first.
Elvis is going to share his latest project with us, I explain to the girls.
And I believe in saving the best for last, he adds. Humility was never his strong suit. I don't want to blow your minds before I get a chance to see what you've brought.
Bussara snorts and plops down in a chair opposite Elvis.
That's okay. As much as we're all dying to see your latest science fair project, I think we can hold out a little bit longer.
Ooh, says Elvis. Sassy. I like it.
Okay, okay, I say, putting an end to their jousting. Let's start with this. I hand the undamaged steel sphere to Bussara and set its flattened twin down on a coffee table. Want to show him what it does?
Elvis eyes the object.
It's a hologram projector.
How did you know that? Bussara asks. She's impressed.
Just a guess, Elvis shrugs modestly. If I were going to design one, that's how I'd do it.
Bussara presses something on the surface of the sphere and sets the ball down on the table in front of us. Suddenly, a life-size Marlowe Holm appears, doing squats on the coffee table as if it were the most natural thing in the world.
Nice.
Elvis stands up and walks around the table, admiring the image from all sides. Then, he sticks his arm through Marlowe's stomach and wiggles his fingers on the other side.
Completely opaque. Pretty impressive. Who's Mr. Sporty?
His name is Marlowe, I say. His mother worked for the company. She invented the technology. Then she found out her bosses were exploring military applications.
Of course they were, Elvis says. You Americans all love a good war.
I choose not to take the bait, though I'm tempted to point out that he's officially one of us. Marlowe's mother tried to expose the project, so the company arranged a car accident. She died, and her son was badly injured. Now Marlowe is one of the people we need to rescue. They put a disc on him and locked him up in a capsule.
Though there's a very good chance that he's already dead, I add, silently, in my mind.
Kat picks up the flattened projector and holds it out for Elvis to see. The company used this one to cause an accident that killed 4 people. It's proof. Elvis takes it and looks it over. It's clear he isn't impressed.
Proof of what? He asks. The things kaput.
Simon said you're a genius. We thought maybe you could,
Bussara starts.
Fix it? No way, Elvis says dismissively. It's totally useless. The other one, though, something like that could come in handy. Maybe I can come up with a few ideas. But all that can wait.
He claps his hands and rubs the palms together.
It's my turn to share.
Elvis reaches over and grabs an ordinary black leather eyeglasses case off the side table next to him. Then he opens the box and pulls out a pair of chunky black glasses. I notice that the sides appear much thicker than usual, but without them, the frames would seem fairly normal.
Not very fashionable, he admits. Then he hands them to Bussara. But I think they would look lovely on you.
Hey, why does she get to try them first? I complain. I'm the one who saved your life, remember?
Yes, says Elvis, but she is the one who is making it worth leaving.
Bussara snorts as she slides them onto her face. I can tell from her expression that she isn't expecting much, but the instant they're on, she jumps to her feet, turning in a circle as she takes in the room.
Oh, my God, she marvels. There's respect in her voice that wasn't there a moment ago. Do you have any idea how dangerous this is?
Yes, replies Elvis gleefully. Do you see the menu? Choose security. That's one of my favorites. The sanitation is pretty good, too.
Shit, Bussara says appreciatively. Whatever she's seeing must be amazing. I'm not sure I've ever heard her use that particular word before. She's obviously experiencing some form of augmented reality because the glasses' lenses are clear. I can see Bussara's eyes right through them, but she's seeing something I'm not. Something that's been overlaid on the environment. Whatever it is, it can't be real, so I don't understand how it could be dangerous. Take a look. Bussara takes off the glasses and passes them to me. When I put them on, I see the room I'm sitting in. There's a menu to my right that tells me the glasses are still in security mode. I look around. Glowing green lines indicate the presence of electrical wires connecting a series of security cameras that are invisible to the naked eye. I use my eyes to toggle down through the menu to sanitation. I can see all the pipes and plumbing inside the walls and under the floor. Electrical highlights the house's electrical grid. Position shows me exactly where I am in the house. It also shows me the location of two secret rooms nearby, their entrances carefully concealed. What's in the two hidden rooms? I ask Elvis. One is a vault where the owner stores his gold. The other is a safe room where the owner can hide in case anyone breaks in looking for his gold. Wait, there's really gold down here in the basement? Kat asks. Sure, Elvis says, as if it's the most natural thing in the world. Where do you keep your gold? Now I know why the tech is so dangerous. The information I'm looking at renders this hilltop fortress about as safe as a cardboard playhouse. I give the glasses to Kat. How did you do this? I ask Elvis.
It was easy. I located the building plans for the house, he said. Believe it or not, they weren't hard to find. It's like putting all your valuables in a safe and then leaving a post-it with the combination on the front.
But the software, says Bussara, did you design it yourself?
I don't have time for that sort of thing. I'm more of an editor than an engineer, Elvis says modestly. I borrowed some software from the company. Then I improved it, of course.
You borrowed it? Kat asks. You mean you hacked the company?
Why get bogged down in semantics, says Elvis. I found it. That's all that matters.
And now I understand why he thought the company's next big play would be augmented reality. They've got the whole team focused exclusively on maps. Last time I checked in on them, they seemed pretty close to finishing one. If I had to guess, I'd say they'll be using it for something soon. What's the map of? Kat asks.
New York City, says Elvis. You can access it with my glasses. Won't do you much good here, though.
They've made a map like yours of all New York City? I ask.
No, of course not, Elvis says with a laugh. Just the island of Manhattan.
Just the island of Manhattan, he says. The financial heart of the United States. That sounds like a security nightmare, says Kat.
Oh, come on. The company's not planning to knock off a bunch of Chase branches. They don't need to rob people to get all their money. That's so old-fashioned. I think the company has something else in mind for the tech. Probably an augmented reality game of some sort. With a good enough map, you could turn the whole city into one giant sandbox.
He claps his hands once more and rubs them together greedily.
So, my turn again. When do I get to try Otherworld?
I knew he'd ask. Elvis may be a genius, but he's never had much common sense. He's the sort of guy who'd find a way to cure cancer and then celebrate by shooting bottle rockets out of his ass.
You don't get to try it, I tell him. It's too dangerous without a headset.
Then come with me to Otherworld, he says.
He's not going to give up, I can already tell.
You brought two of those discs, didn't you?
No way, Kat tells him. Didn't Simon tell you about them? The discs are deadly. You could die.
Like I'm living it up right now, Elvis says. Come on, just a peek. If you guys don't want to go, maybe Busara could join me.
She can't, I say. She's sick. Busara is giving me serious side-eye, which doesn't prevent me from speaking for myself. I have a heart condition, she explains to Elvis. With a disc on, the action in Otherworld could kill me.
You're sick?
Elvis looks stricken.
Moving on, Kat announces. Thank you, Busara says with a huff.
Look, here's the deal with Otherworld, I say. There's no way any of us are wearing discs. I don't even know where we'd end up in Otherworld when we put them on. We might not be together in the same place.
You'd both enter the game at the gates of Imra, Busara says. Elvis is a new player, so he'd go straight to setup and then to Imra. You're not a new player, obviously, and the game will recognize you no matter what gear you're wearing. The last time you were in Otherworld, you passed through the exit in the ice cave, so the game will send you back to the beginning, too. And don't forget, one of the discs we brought here is the master disc that my dad made. Remember the amulet I wore when I was the Clayman? Whoever has the master disc would be wearing it in the game. It could send you anywhere you want to go.
I give Busara a dirty look. I don't know why I was expecting her to back me up. The only thing she really gives a damn about is finding her father. Busara was the one who tricked me into putting on a disc in the first place. Also, she could punish Milo Jokin for the things he did to her dad. In the past few days, I'd almost started to trust her again.
Almost.
Yeah, the master disc could send one of us anywhere he wanted to go. The other person would get screwed. That's how it worked when you were the Clayman, remember? You got to go wherever you wanted, and I was the one who always ended up fighting for his life.
I'm sorry, Busara says.
Yeah, sure you are.
Come on, Simon. Don't give me a hard time, she pleads. It's just that we're safe here for a little while. If you and Elvis go to the ice cave, you guys could find a way to free my dad's avatar from the ice. He could help us figure out what to do to stop the company. My dad will tell us where to find his body, and who knows, maybe he can help us rescue Marlo and Gorog, too.
I think we should do this, Elvis announces. I get to see Otherworld. We both talk to Busara's dad. It's a win-win situation.
No, it's a blatant attempt to suck up to Busara.
No one's going to win if you get murdered by some psycho player, Kat points out.
I vote no. We wait until we can buy some headsets. She doesn't know about the headsets. I watch her face fall as Elvis tells her about the bidding wars. There's no way we'll ever be able to purchase one. If we return to Otherworld, we'll have to use discs.
We'll have to go back sooner rather than later, Busara says when Elvis is done. We could use my dad's help, and he needs ours.
I look over at Kat. It hurts to see her look so defeated.
I gladly volunteer for this mission, Elvis announces.
He can't go alone, I tell Kat. I'll have to go with him.
Elvis shouldn't be going at all, Kat says.
I'll go with you.
Your leg is still injured, I tell her.
It's getting better, she insists.
It's still too much of a risk. Your body needs a few more days to heal.
Then it's decided.
Elvis claps his hands and rubs them together. Grab the discs. It's time for Elvis and Simon's big adventure.
Not tonight, I say. Tomorrow. If I'm doing this, I'm going to need a good night's sleep and some time alone with Kat. It's the first time Kat and I have shared a bed without someone else in the room. I've dreamed about this moment every day for a million years. Now it's finally arrived, and she's lying with her back to me, which manages to be extremely depressing despite the fact that her newly clean sweatpants say Diva across the ass.
Kat, I say.
What if something happens to you? She asks.
I'll be careful. I promise, though we both know it's bullshit. There's no way to be careful in Otherworld.
We've been a couple for less than 96 hours. We deserve more time together, she says.
I couldn't agree more. I finally get the one thing I wanted most in the world, and now I have to leave her. I've experienced my share of disappointments in life, but this is by far the biggest. I'm really hoping the universe gets tired of teaching me lessons. Each one seems to suck more than the last.
Oh, come on. I try to play cool.
You're acting like I'm already dead. Elvis and I will only be crossing the ice fields. The children will help us reach the cave.
And what about the 2,000 psychos who've bought all the headsets?
We'll just have to avoid them.
How?
She demands.
I don't know, I admit, giving up the act.
Listen, Kat, if you think we should wait, we'll wait. But you heard what Elvis said. We won't be getting headsets anytime soon.
Kat doesn't respond.
Do you want to spend tonight arguing? I ask her.
No.
When she rolls over, I can feel her heart pounding against my chest. This is our first night together, and both of us know that it may be our last.
Kat is sleeping, but I haven't once closed my eyes. I slide on my jeans and leave the room, shutting the door softly behind me. Outside in the upstairs living area, the glass-enclosed gardens are dimly lit. I make it to the kitchen and manage to locate a glass. I'm filling it with water when I hear something behind me, rolling across tiles. I turn to see Marlo Holm walking toward me, wearing jeans and a t-shirt. He stops right in front of me. His nose is less than a few feet from mine, yet his eyes are staring straight through me. He doesn't seem to realize I'm here. I feel the glass slip out of my hand, and the spray of water on my ankles. Either I've gone completely insane, or Marlo must have died in Otherworld, and I'm being visited by his ghost. My knees weaken. I'm on the verge of collapse when Marlo vanishes, and another figure steps into the room. Elvis has already shaved his head so he can stick on the disc in the morning, and I probably wouldn't recognize him if it weren't for his shit-eating grin. The smile vanishes as soon as he sees me, and he sets the controls he's fashioned out of old PlayStation gear down on the counter.
Jesus, Simon, I didn't mean to scare you. Are you okay?
One of my hands finds the fridge handle, which I use to steady myself. The other clenches into a fist that flies through the air but hits nothing.
Hey, I'm sorry, Elvis cries.
Despite the punch I just threw at him, he lurches forward and grabs me before I rip the handle off the fridge and crash to the ground.
I really thought you'd find it funny.
How did you do that? I gasp.
The projector, he says.
Once I'm fully upright, he lets go of me and takes a hesitant step backward.
That's why it's round. It moves. I've been tinkering with it since you guys went to bed.
Don't you ever sleep? I ask him.
Sure, about 4 hours a night, Elvis tells me. They've had me on Adderall since the second grade. But seriously, Simon, what the hell has happened to you?
You'll see, I tell him, when we get to Otherworld. The petting zoo. I never wanted to see this place again. Yet here I am, standing on top of a dormant volcano with high gilded gates at my back. The buildings behind me house the workers of Imra, the Otherworld Welcome Center that lies deep inside the volcano's cone. This is where all new players arrive. In Imra, you can sample the pleasures that the virtual world has to offer and figure out what suits your tastes best. I have zero desire to set foot inside the city the company once billed as the resort of the future. Elvis and I have a long trek ahead of us, across a wasteland and over the ice fields. There's no telling what we'll encounter along the way. In the distance, a cloud of red dust is rolling across the otherwise empty landscape. I'm pretty sure it's a herd of buffalo. Like the other animals here, they're much more dangerous than the real-world creatures they were designed to resemble. I was nearly trampled by the buffalo on my first visit to Otherworld. Their stench alone could have killed me. As I watch the stampede, it occurs to me that there is nothing for the beast to be running to or from. I wonder if they ever rest. They must know as well as I do that it's dangerous to stop moving in Otherworld. A glowing strip of white lines the horizon beyond the wasteland. It's the edge of the ice fields. The realms here end and begin abruptly. You can literally step out of one and into the next. I'm trying to calculate how long it will take to reach the ice when I feel a tap on my shoulder. There's a female avatar standing behind me, a gleaming battle axe swung over one shoulder. Whoever's controlling the avatar is clearly a developmentally challenged pervert. Her boobs are so massive that if Earth physics applied here, she'd fall over, face forward.
Yeah? I ask, my fingers ready to reach for my dagger. I'd be even ruder if it weren't for the battle axe.
Simon, it's me!
I groan. Good God, Elvis, this is pathetic. What are you, 12 years old?
Don't give me a hard time, dickhead, Elvis says, gazing adoringly at his enormous bosoms. He hasn't bothered to change his voice, and the combination is goddamn disturbing.
I've been stuck in the middle of nowhere for 6 whole months. By the way, this tech is fantastic. My boobs feel amazing. Just like the real things, I bet.
They are cumbersome, though. You really have to respect the ladies. How do they manage to run or play sports?
Go back right now and get rid of the giant boobs, I order. And toss the axe, too. I told you to choose fire as your weapon. We'll need it in the ice cave. Go. You have 10 seconds.
Elvis gives me an exaggerated once-over.
Maybe you should come back to set up with me, he snips. Your avatar could use a little work, too. I think you could do a lot better than a farmhand with a fur fetish.
My avatar never changes. Black shirt, black pants, brown cloak. In preparation for the ice fields, I've donned a thick fur coat. The body inside the ensemble is identical to my own.
I'm a druid, you moron, I bark.
Of all people, I would have expected him to recognize the costume.
Just go, would you?
The avatar rolls her anime-sized eyes.
You're not a druid. You're a petty tyrant, she informs me in Elvis's voice.
Then she disappears. While Elvis is changing into something more appropriate, I hear a shot behind me. I spin around and peer through the gates. The road that leads to the entrance of Imra cuts straight through the workers' town, which is currently eerily quiet. The last time I was here, there were hundreds of non-player characters going about their business. Now, the place appears to be empty, though it's pretty clear that the inhabitants didn't wander off. I don't see any bodies, but the brick walls of the buildings look wet with what I'm starting to realize is probably blood. I hear a spray of machine gun fire, and I suddenly know what's happening. A headset player has gone on a rampage. He's slaughtering the NPCs one by one. I feel the rage begin to swell inside me. What kind of psycho massacres characters that weren't designed to fight back? The answer appears right in front of me. A muscle-bound avatar with a buzz cut darts across the road from one building and presses his back against another on the opposite side. His bulging biceps strain against the sleeves of a black t-shirt that's neatly tucked into camouflage pants. The guy is G.I. Joe pumped up on a cocktail of meth and steroids. There's a crazy smile on his face as he waits for someone to round the corner. A few seconds later, a female NPC appears in the intersection. She's a standard model, pretty and bland. G.I. Joe points the gun to her head. She looks at him in confusion. There's no fear on her face. This is not what is meant to happen. I turn away just as the shot is fired. When I glance back up, there's a bright red stain on the road, but the female's body is already gone. Of course, Elvis chooses this moment to reappear. His avatar is a perfect copy of his real-world body. He's dressed in a long sable coat and a matching fur hat. A torch is tucked into his waistband. I grab him by the collar and drag him behind one of the pillars that frame the gates.
Hey, he cries. What the hell, Simon? That hurt!
Then there's a moment of reverent silence.
It hurt. Oh my God, it hurt. This tech is amazing.
Shut up, I hiss.
There's a guy killing everyone inside.
Elvis peeks around the pillar.
Well, that's not very nice, is it? Let's go take him out, he says. Come on, we've got time for a bit of fun, don't we?
Apparently none of my warnings have managed to make an impression.
This is not a game, dipshit. If that guy shoots us, we'll die.
How many times does he need to be told before it sinks into his head? Would it make any difference if I spoke in Ukrainian?
Right, Elvis says, pulling his head back from around the corner.
Then I think we may have a problem.
That dude saw you, didn't he? I groan.
Yeah, Elvis says. Sorry about that. He's coming this way.
We can't make a run in the direction of the ice fields. There's nowhere to take cover. Not even a rock large enough to hide one of us. The killer could stand at the top of the mountain and take leisurely shots until both of our avatars are riddled with bullet holes.
There? Elvis asks.
He's pointing to the right of the gates, at a dense wall of foliage that I assumed was decorative, but now I can see a wooden roof poking out from the top. There must be something beyond the greenery. We run for cover, but find the vegetation impenetrable. Thick green ivy vines have twisted together to form a wall. I pull my dagger out of my boot and start hacking away, but every time I manage to cut through one of the thick stems, a new vine immediately snakes out of the ground and takes its place. These are no ordinary plants. Like everything else in here, they're mutants that have little in common with their earth-dwelling counterparts. A bullet whizzes past my ear.
Let me, Elvis insists.
His torch ignites and he steps forward, shoving the blaze at the ivy. The vines curl back, desperate to escape the heat, and a narrow passage opens in front of us. We step inside, and the wall of foliage closes behind us. We can hear G.I. Joe spraying the vines with a shower of bullets, but we never get hit. Nature has formed a protective cocoon around our avatars.
See? Elvis says cockily. I get us in trouble, and I get us right back out again.
His bragging makes me nervous. I'm not convinced we're out of the woods just yet. Some of the vines seem to have scales. The fire is still holding most of them back, but then I feel a flicker against my cheek, and then another on my ear. I yank my foot away from a tendril that's trying to creep up my pant leg. The ivy is getting bolder. Elvis stops.
Do you hear that? He asks.
I do. The sound is soft enough that I might have mistaken it for the wind. But it's not. It's hissing.
Keep walking, I urge Elvis. Don't stop again. Where was the snake that was making that sound?
He whispers, moving fast with the torch held out in front of him.
Did you see it?
The snake? What a joke. I'd laugh if I weren't going to die. Elvis is about to get his second lesson in otherworld survival. Suddenly, all the vines around us are writhing.
You mean snakes, I say.
The tip of one of the vines whips toward me. I lop it off with my dagger, and a fanged head falls at my feet.
What the?
Elvis starts to say. Shut up and run, I shout. Elvis leads the way, slicing through the air with his torch like a master swordsman. This is hardly the first game he and I have played together. I knew he was a genius with handheld controls, but this shit is ridiculous. I can smell the burning flesh of snake vines that have gotten too close. It's not an entirely unpleasant odor. I wish I'd eaten a bigger breakfast. Then, the vines suddenly part, and we find ourselves standing out in the open, with a wooden cottage in front of us. I turn around in time to see the passageway disappear. All that's left is a solid mass of slithering scales, fangs, and muscle. Elvis is bent over, panting.
What the hell are those?
He asks. Unintended consequences, I say. Digital DNA mixes easily in Otherworld. I've seen a few crazy combinations, but this is my first plant-animal hybrid. I didn't even know it was possible.
Anything is possible in Otherworld.
A movie star handsome NPC appears at the entrance of a tiny Swiss-style cottage with a steeply pitched roof and overflowing flower boxes. The NPC is wearing lederhosen, leather shorts with leather suspenders, along with knee-high socks and boots. He's topped off the outfit with a dorky hat, complete with feather. Then again, who am I to judge? I'm sure Elvis and I look equally ridiculous. The cottage stands at the entrance to what appears to be some kind of amusement park. The structures behind it have been overtaken by the ivy. Monstrous green forms loom over the three of us. It's impossible to say what any of them might have once been.
Welcome to Gimmelwald, the big blonde NPC says cheerfully with a slight German accent. My name is Gunther. Are you here for a tour of our childcare facilities?
Childcare facilities? We just walked through a wall of snakes, I say. I hope you're not expecting a bunch of kids to show up here anytime soon.
So you're not in need of our services? Gunther asks.
We aren't looking for a babysitter, if that's what you're asking, Elvis says.
Gunther appears disappointed by the news, and I wonder if the NPCs ever get bored.
Then may I ask why you are here?
Someone was trying to kill us, Elvis tells him. We came in here to hide.
You were being chased by another guest just now?
Gunther inquires. Yes, I say.
Gunther appears genuinely upset by the situation.
I do apologize. Everything has changed so much. Our realm is no longer what the Creator intended it to be. Some of...
Elvis puts a hand up.
I'm sorry. Could you hold on one second, Gunther?
He says. I need a quick word with my colleague. Then he leans over with his lips near my ear. Isn't this guy an NPC? He whispers. I nod. But it doesn't seem like he's sticking to a script. He's improvising, Elvis says.
That means...
Yeah, I say. There's no doubt that Gunther is the most advanced AI that Elvis has ever encountered, but he hasn't seen anything yet. I'll let him figure that out for himself. That means it's probably a good idea not to be rude. When Elvis looks back at Gunther, his avatar's eyes are wide with wonder.
I apologize for interrupting, he says.
You were saying?
I was about to say that some of the guests these days can be quite unpleasant, but you're safe with us. There's no need to worry about anyone following you into Gimmelwald. Please,
Gunther says, gesturing towards the cottage.
Come inside for some cocoa. You're our first visitors since the incident. How did you make it inside, if you don't mind my asking?
Fire, I say, as we follow Gunther into the little house. I'd ask him about the incident he just mentioned, but we don't have time for a story. I step into the cottage and have a look around, which takes all of 2 seconds. The place is the size of a large playhouse, and if I had to guess, I'd say Gunther's interior decorator was a 6-year-old Swiss girl.
It sounds like you got very lucky, says Gunther. The vines may fear fire, but there are many beasts here who would happily risk being burned for a meal.
Beasts? I ask. What kind of beasts do you have in Gimmelwald?
I don't really know, the NPC replies cheerfully. By now, there could be almost anything in our forests. That is why I chose to stay in the cottage.
There's a tiny stove in the corner. Gunther turns a burner on low and begins to fill a pot with milk. No cocoa for me, please, I tell him.
Or me, thanks, Elvis chimes in. No.
Gunther seems heartbroken for a moment. Then he discovers his cloud's silver lining.
Oh, well, more for me.
His life, if that's what you'd call it, must suck. No wonder he was happy to see us.
So you stay here in this cottage all the time? Elvis asks. It's either that or be eaten by the beasts, Gunther replies.
Why are there man-eating beasts here in Gimmelwald? Elvis asks.
I thought you said this realm was meant to be for kids. Oh, it was, Gunther says. The Creator knew many of our adult guests wouldn't feel comfortable leaving their young offspring unattended at home, so he designed several realms that would allow human children to experience the wonders of Otherworld. But the few guests we've greeted here have all been adults, and some of them were quite unsavory.
The image of child-sized capsules pops into my mind. I wonder if the company was planning to offer family discount plans. Mom and Dad could live out their homicidal fantasies while the offspring were coddled by NPCs.
It's a pity. Gimmelwald was meant to be the ultimate petting zoo,
Gunther continues, gesturing to the wild world beyond the cottage.
Our beasts were designed to be docile enough to cuddle and ride. There were lambs and goats and ponies, of course, but there were also bears and wolves and wild boars. Unfortunately, none of them have stayed tame. The children were able to keep them under control, but now that the children are gone, the beasts have free rein.
Children? Elvis looks over at me. What children? You said no kids ever came here. He thinks Gunther is talking about little humans. I suppose I should have given him a heads up about the children. Remember what I said about digital DNA? The children are what happens when you mix beasts, the animals that Milo created for the game,
with the elementals that rule Otherworld's realms. Elvis's jaw drops.
Wait, are you saying the elementals and the beasts?
I once got scolded for asking the same question. I'm glad to know I'm not the only one with a dirty mind. No, I assure him. I don't know exactly how it worked, but supposedly there wasn't any sex involved. Before the company fixed the bug, hybrid babies kept popping up all over the place.
Our elemental ones had dozens of children, Gunter announces proudly. A few of them belonged to the Creator as well.
The Creator?
Elvis massages his temples as if he's worried his head might explode. The Creator was Milo Jolkin's avatar. Milo was in Otherworld before anyone else, and he really got around. He mixed his digital DNA with pretty much everything here, I explain. Then I turn back to Gunther. So where are the children of Gimmelwald now? I ask. Gunther instantly clams up. Despite the pleasant conversation, we still haven't won his confidence.
They are in a safe place, he says.
Good. As long as he's sure the children are safe, I have no interest in digging any further. Glad to hear it. So how do my friend and I get out of here? We're on a mission, and we don't have much time left.
You're free to leave this realm at any time, Gunther tells us.
Okay, maybe I should rephrase my friend's question, Elvis says. How do we get out without getting eaten by some kind of mutant beast?
Oh, I'm afraid you will both be consumed shortly after you leave this cottage, Gunther tells us. It may be unpleasant, but once the kill is registered, your avatar will return to setup. If that option does not appeal to you, perhaps a suicide would be preferable.
I can't believe I let Elvis and Busara talk me into this shit. I should have listened to Kat. From now on, no one's coming back to this hellhole with a disc on.
No, I tell Gunther. We can't let our avatars die. We're not like the other guests. This isn't a game for us.
Then perhaps you should speak to Vola, the NPC says. She is the elemental who rules this realm.
How the hell are we going to speak to Vola without leaving this house? I demand.
Hey, I feel Elvis tapping my shoulder. Naked lady alert. 3 o'clock, he whispers.
Outside the window, at the edge of the forest, a woman is rising from the ground. Her skin is the color of rich, dark soil, and the hair that cascades over her shoulders and chest is composed of braided vines. When she finally steps out of the earth, she stands at least 7 feet tall, with curves that no earth woman could possibly possess. I'm sure Elvis would love to know if her boobs are equally impressive, but she's holding something against her chest. Gunther guides us outside and greets the elemental with a reverent bow.
These two guests would like to leave, but they don't want their avatars to die. They claim they are not like the others.
All guests are the same.
Vola moves towards us, shedding a fine layer of dirt with each step. Her voice is soft, like a rushing stream or the rustling of leaves.
They come here to kill and torture and abuse. They do not deserve any mercy.
She stops and glares down at Elvis and me.
Your kind has inflicted great pain upon the residents of Otherworld, and yet you refuse to suffer a single moment of unpleasantness?
Excuse me, ma'am, but I just got here, Elvis says. I swear I haven't inflicted any pain on anyone yet.
You burned my ivy, Vola says. You don't imagine it feels any pain?
Elvis actually stops for a moment and seems to ponder the idea.
Wow, he replies. You know, that's actually a really great question. Might end up keeping me awake for a couple of nights. But for now, all I can say is I acted in self-defense. I only burned the vines because they were trying to kill me.
They've seen guests enter my realm and slaughter many of my children. They've witnessed the rest of my offspring being taken away for their own protection. The vines were gentle once.
They changed into what they've become to repel humans like you. I wonder if the slaughter is the incident Gunter mentioned earlier. I'm about to ask when Vola shifts and I finally see what's in her arms. It's a tiny creature covered in pale green scales. It looks like a baby, but I must be mistaken. Milo Jokin fixed the bad code that was responsible for the children. There shouldn't be any babies here in Otherworld. Is that one of your children? I ask, moving toward her for a closer look.
Step back,
Vola bellows, clutching her baby against her chest. The ground shakes and leaves rain down from the trees. Elvis elbows me in the side.
Come on, Simon. Tell the lady you're sorry.
I know I should, but I don't. There's something else that needs to come out first.
Is he new? Is that why he's still here in Gimmelwald with you?
He is my first since your kind arrived. It is not safe for him here. They will come for him as soon as he's grown and take him to a realm that guests are not allowed to enter. I suddenly have a really bad feeling about all of this. Children are being born again, and then someone is rounding them up. Who are they?
Moloch's soldiers, says Vola. Since the Creator abandoned us, the Elemental of Imperium has taken over the Creator's role as the protector of the children.
Oh, shit. That is not good. Not good at all. The Creator died when Milo Jokin did. And two guys who work for the company control Moloch. He's supposed to be the Elemental of Imperium, but he's nothing more than an avatar whose purpose is to exterminate other worlds' children. I can only imagine what Moloch has in store for the ones he's been gathering, and the new ones the company has been letting the game generate.
I know Moloch. You can't trust him, I warn her. Your children are in terrible danger. You are lying, she roars, and the earth trembles once more. It takes every bit of courage I can summon to stand my ground.
I swear to you, I'm telling the truth, I assure her. If you let us leave Gimmelwald without dying, I promise we will do our best to help them.
No, Vola says. I will not take the word of a human guest over one of my own kind. You may leave Gimmelwald, but you must do it without my assistance.
You go, Simon, I hear Elvis insist. You have the Master Disc. Use the amulet and get to the ice fields.
I'll stay here and wait for you. If I don't die of boredom, I should be safe in the cottage until the girls pull us out. Gunter and I can play cards or something.
Cards? Gunter asks, sounding quite intrigued. I think he may be desperate for company.
No, I tell Elvis. We stick together. That's how this works. There's no safe place in Otherworld. I'm not going to leave you behind.
It feels a bit strange to be bickering in front of an NPC and a giant woman who's recently risen out of the earth, especially since the Queen of Dirt seems to be hanging on my every word. I wish she'd give us a little privacy, but I'm guessing that's probably too much to ask right now.
So we're both going to just sit here until the girls peel off our discs?
Elvis complains.
That doesn't even make sense. Why don't you just go ahead and check on the Dirt Lady's kids and then pop over for a chat with Busara's dad? I'll be fine here, I swear.
You don't know that. I'm about to lose it. Why can't he just take me at my word? I already lost one friend in Otherworld. I got separated from my companions, and she died trying to save me. I'm not going to lose another person I care about. Either we go to the ice fields together or we don't go at all.
You care about me?
Elvis asks. He looks genuinely touched.
Oh, Jesus, I groan. Do we have to do this now? Of course I care about you.
Wait, do you want a hug, too?
Why do you wish to visit the ice fields? The Elemental interrupts.
I suspect she knows what's there. We're trying to reach the cave where the Creator once took shelter, I tell her. There's someone trapped inside that we need to help. The Naked Dirt Lady isn't buying it.
I have never known your kind to show compassion toward one another.
Yeah, well, Otherworld doesn't exactly attract the finest specimens that humanity has to offer, I snip. I've given up trying to convince her that I'm not an asshole.